And if you could turn in your Bibles to Exodus chapter 2. And there went a man of house of Levi, and took to wife a daughter of Levi. And woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could no longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes, and daubed it with slime and with pitch, and put the child therein, and she laid it in the flat by the river's bank. And his sister stood afar off to wait what would be done to him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him, and said, "This is one of the Hebrew's children." Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Take this child away, and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages." And the woman took the child, and nursed it. And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses. And she said, "Because I drew him out of the water." And it came to pass in those days, when Moses was grown, that he went out unto his brethren, and he looked on their burdens, and he spied an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way. And when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strive together. And he said to him that did wrong, "Wherefore smitest thy fellow?" And he said, "Who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me, as thou killed the Egyptian?" And Moses feared and said, "Surely this thing is known." Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh, and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Now the priests of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came and drew water, and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them, and watered their flock. And when they came to Reuel, their father, he said, "How is it that you are come so soon today?" And they said, "An Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds, and also drew water enough for us, and watered the flock." And he said unto his daughters, "And where is he? Why is it that ye have left the man? Call him, that he may eat bread." And Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses Zipporah his daughter. And she bare him a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have been a stranger in a strange land." And it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage. And their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God had respect unto them. May the Lord add his blessings to the reading of his word. And I said before, I like to give things headings and titles, help me to remember as I go along. So I've called Exodus chapter 2, "The Redeemer in Making." On the first leg of our journey into the book of Exodus, we were reminded of the love of God for those who are his. We were also reminded of his faithfulness in keeping all his promises. And at the end of chapter 1, we saw that the new king of Egypt did not know Joseph. He did not appreciate the blessings that Egypt had enjoyed as a result of Joseph and the people of Israel. Instead, he saw the people of Israel as a threat to Egypt, particularly in the case they were attacked by an enemy. He feared that the Israelites would join their enemies and overtake the Egyptians. He therefore sought to reduce the Israelite population by first enslaving them, causing them to work on the building site and in the fields. When that failed, he turned to genocide by first of all commanding the Hebrew midwives to kill all the newborn boys. When that failed, he turned to his own people and he commanded them that they should throw all newborn baby boys into the river Nile, which is where we ended and which brings us to chapter 2. Now, when you look at a chapter in the Bible, again, depending on what you're looking at, you find different themes. I've divided the chapter into two, again, for my help and hopefully to help you to understand where I'm going. And I've divided it from verses 1 to 14, which I call the Redeemer in Egypt, and from verse 15 to the end, the Redeemer in Midian. Pretty straightforward, pretty easy. Good for me. The answer to the question was the king's command to throw the newborn baby boys of the Israelites into the river Nile, obey. That's where we finished. Was that command obeyed? Well, most certainly it was obeyed. However, before we look at that in detail, we're introduced to the Redeemer's parents in verse 1. And I've called it, first one, his parentage. Very important, our parentage. And a man of the house of Levi went and took as his wife a daughter of Levi. Moses' parents were descendants of Levi, one of Jacob's sons. And in Romans 11 and verse 33 we read, the depth of the riches of God's wisdom and knowledge are unfathomable. His judgments are unsearchable and his ways past finding out. God does things different to us. Levi and his brother Simeon took matters into their own hands and they committed murder because of what happened to their sister. Their father said to them in Genesis 34, you have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed and my household. And then in Genesis 49 and verse 7, he said, cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob, and I will scatter them in Israel. With the Levites, that proclamation partially came true. They were indeed scattered among the other tribes. They did not have any land. But as we will see, it's from this tribe that God, chosen Redeemer of the Israelites, would come. It was this tribe that God selected for priestly duties. It's a reminder to us of God's grace in dealing with each of us. It wasn't what they did or who they were that made God choose them as the tribe from which the Israelites' Redeemer would descend. Verse 2 to 4 are called his birth. So the woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 months. She saw that he was a beautiful child. Most mothers would say that their newborn child are beautiful. However, it was more than his outward appearance. Some translation used the word goodly, translated from the same word as used in Genesis when God described his creation. In Hebrews 11 and verse 23 we read, by faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. A reminder of the midwives. They disobeyed the commandment of Pharaoh because they feared God. As we all know, it is difficult to keep a young child quiet. During the past week, we had our young grandchild. Admitting she's a bit older than 3 months. But I would think it would be very difficult to have kept her quiet over the 3 months. I think everybody would know that she was around. But yeah, it's difficult to keep a young child quiet. So the 3 months must have been a time of anxiety for the parents, but they were determined to keep their baby boy safe. However, there came a point when they felt it was no longer safe to keep the child at home. So by faith, they took some action. When she could no longer hide him, she took an ark of bulrushes for him and daubed it with asphalt and pitch. She put the child in it and laid it in the reeds by the riverbank. When we started our journey a few weeks ago, I said, if you've never taken a journey through the book of Exodus, that you should be prepared to be amazed. But even if you have taken that journey, I think you'll agree, as we look at this next few verses, that what happened was indeed amazing. She made an ark of bulrushes. Was it remembering that Noah was commanded to build an ark, which was used by God to save him and his family? She certainly intended her child to survive. The ark was daubed with asphalt and pitch, which made it watertight. She did not know how, but by faith she trusted in God, that God would intervene. She did not just put the ark in the river. Some translation read, she placed the ark where the daughter of Pharaoh came to wash herself. From a human or practical point of view, you would consider that such a place would be the least likely to place your child if you wanted to keep him safe, if you wanted him to survive. In placing the child in the River Nile, she was, in fact, carrying out the king's command in a way of casting the baby boy into the River Nile. He said, cast the child into the River Nile. He didn't say how he should do it. Having placed the child in the river, she did not abandon it. Jochebed, Moses' mother's name, could have done nothing. And having put her trust in God, waited for God to intervene and to save her son. Do we sometimes sit back when we are faced with some great or important decision and think, well, I'm doing this for God, he'll sort it out, I've put my trust in him, I just have to wait. God has given us abilities, he's given us knowledge, he's given us understanding. He expects us to use them wisely. Moses' mother, far from abandoning him, left his sister to keep watch as to what would happen to him. Verses 5 to 10, his adoption. Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, and her maiden walked along the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. It is believed that going down to bathe by the river was a religious activity that was carried out on a fairly regular basis. And so when she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maids to get it. The ark, having been spotted by Pharaoh's daughter and her maids as they walk along, is retrieved. On opening the ark, the baby is immediately recognized as a child of the Israelites. Now, the reason why that is important, apparently it was quite a common thing that if you did want to get rid of a child, you would place him by the river, where the ladies would either go to wash or wash their clothes, and if they see a child, they will take the child away. But this particular place was where the princess went to wash. This is one of the Hebrew's children. Being Pharaoh's daughter, the expected reaction from her would naturally, one would expect, to be just throw the child into the river. Instead, as she gazed on the child and hears its cry, she shed tears of compassion. As I said, when the child was placed in the bulrushes, there was every possibility that she would be found, or he would be found, by the princess, because that was where she usually went. However, what couldn't be certain was what her reaction would be on finding the child. Was it luck, or was it the grace of God fulfilling his promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that when the child cried, the mother, Pharaoh's daughter, was led to compassion? In Miriam's action, we're once again reminded of the amazing grace of God. Miriam is believed to have been 10 or 12 years old. Her mother could not have known what the reaction of Pharaoh's daughter would be, and so it's unlikely that she would have been able to brief Miriam on what to say. On the discovery of her brother, she approaches Pharaoh's daughter. Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you? With those words inspired by God, Miriam assumes, 10 or 12 years old, that this Egyptian princess would not only disobey her father's command, but that she would raise the child in Pharaoh's palace as her own. Pharaoh's daughter, even if she was suspicious, did not question Miriam's suggestion, but willingly accept Miriam's solution to the problem. God is in control. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the maiden went and called the child's mother. Jochebed had placed her son in the river of death, as commanded by the king. Now her son was being returned to her alive, so that she could care for him, so that she could teach him about their gracious and loving God. As parents, we have only a short time to prepare our children to go out into the world. Parents need to make the most of that time. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. Again, we're reminded of the grace of God. Not only was her child being saved and returned to her, she was actually being paid wages to keep him alive. They were allowed to bring up their child in their own home. What a blessing when many around would have been grieving because their children had been cast into the Nile. It is believed that Moses' mother would have had a number of years bringing him up. During those years, he would have learned from his mother of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It is a privilege and an honor to bring up our children. We are told in God's word, children are a blessing. We need to bring them up so that we leave with them impressions of godly living. Those impressions, hopefully, will always be a part of their life. Proverbs 22 and verse 6 says, "Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Today, many a child is being brought up with no appreciation or knowledge of a gracious God. I read in a recent survey that's been carried out in the UK. I'm not sure who exactly carried it out, but it says that 52% of the population in the UK have no religion, have no belief in God. And the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, "Because I drew him out of the water." An Israelite child is adopted by an Egyptian princess. The early years of Moses would have been a blessing for his family, but at the same time, the knowledge that one day soon he would have to leave their Israelite family and be a part of an Egyptian family. How could an Israelite child be brought up in the home of an Egyptian king who ordered all Israelite baby boys to be killed? It is only by the grace of God. Verses 11 to 14, his rejection. Moses was saved in order that through him God might redeem his people. However, Moses was not quite ready for that task. He needed some training. He knew that he was an Israelite from his early upbringing. Though he grew up in the comfort and the luxury of a palace, he did not forget or ignore his people. In Hebrews 11 and verse 24 we read, "By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter." Now it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out to his brethren, and he looked at their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. Acts 7 and verse 23. When he was full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. He saw injustice being meted out on one of his brethren. Moses could have carried on. He could have ignored the situation. He was okay. He had the luxury and the comfort of the palace. He did not have to suffer the rigors of the harsh treatment and the hard labor. However, instead of looking away, he looked this way and he looked that way. And when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. I said earlier that he needed some training. He probably thought he was doing God's work. It is quite likely that it was one of the taskmasters that was killed. That meant he was in trouble with Pharaoh. He had killed one of Pharaoh's officers. That placed him in a difficult position. A secret that is not a secret. He looked this way and he looked that way, and he thought no one would know about it. Moses probably expected his Israelite brother to keep what had happened a secret between them, he doesn't, well, we don't know why, what was the motive, but obviously his action was related to some of the other Israelites. For we read that when he went out the second day, behold, two Hebrew men were fighting. And he said to the one who did the wrong, why are you striking your companion? He said, who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? So Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. I wonder if you've ever been in a situation where you've done what you thought it was a good thing. Perhaps you thought you were doing it for God, only to find later that it backfires on you. Rather than being looked upon as a deliverer, Moses is rejected by his brothers. As I said, he may have regarded that what he was doing was for God or helping God. But his brother says, you have no authority over us. Moses' mother, during the time that he spent with her, must have related to him God's promise to deliver his people at a certain time. And he possibly believed that his action was helping God. The second half of our chapter, verses 15 to 25, the Redeemer in Midian. Moses may have hoped that his secret would not reach the ears of Pharaoh. No secret is a secret. No such luck for him. Verse 15, his flight. When Pharaoh heard of his matter, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Once Pharaoh became aware of Moses' action, flight was the only option. He had escaped the king's death command once. He might have wondered why things have turned out the way they did. It would appear that he was the right person, in the right place to be used as a redeemer. Instead, his brethren rejected him, and he had to flee for his life. The reason, he still needed some more training. His flight takes him from the luxury of the palace in Egypt to a seat by a well in Midian. Verses 16 to 19, his intervention. The Midianites were descendants of Abraham, Genesis 25, verses 2 and 4. They were a rich and powerful people. Some lived in cities, while others lived a nomadic existence. The well in those days was a meeting place, a place where one could go if you were new and make new acquaintances. The priest of Midian had 7 daughters. They came and drew water, filled the troughs with the water to water their father's flock. Unfortunately, some shepherds came along and drove them away. But Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. Moses once again intervenes. This time, however, there are no dead bodies. The shepherds would normally fill the water trough and allow their sheep to drink. And you can imagine if you had a lot of sheep, it would be a time-consuming task. But worst of all, imagine your frustration of having filled the troughs for your sheep to drink, and along comes someone and drives your sheep away while their sheep drinks what you have filled. This was the situation that the daughters of the Midian priests experienced and which Moses witnessed. Once again, recognizing injustice, Moses interceded. The result was that the daughters of the priests were able to return home earlier than usual, much to their father's surprise. When they came to rule their father, he said, how is it that you've come so soon today? And they said, an Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds, and he also drew enough water for us, and he watered the flock. Moses' clothes would have suggested to a stranger that he was an Egyptian. An Egyptian delivered us, they said. He changed their circumstances. He effectively removed them from under the power of the other shepherds. Moses knew that he was an Israelite, but what a change from the luxuries of the palace to a seat by a well in Midian. To an Egyptian, every shepherd is an abomination. His outward garments may have suggested that he was an Egyptian, but his actions declared that he was an Israelite. Our outward appearance may suggest to strangers, to those in the world, that we are of this world, but would our actions declare that we are just strangers passing through, just stopping at the well? The priest is interested in this Egyptian that was able to perform such a feat. Verses 20 to 22, his reception. So he said to his daughters, "Where is he? Why is it that you have left the man? Call him, that he may eat bread." Moses did not presume that his service that he rendered made him eligible for some reward. He saw a need. He was able to fulfill that need, and he did so. The priest sends for Moses so that he may eat with them and his family. Was it a chance meeting, or was it God's will? It was a meeting that was to have a long-term and dramatic effect on the life of Moses. Moses was content to live with the man, and he gave Zipporah his daughter to Moses. She bore him a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have been a stranger in a foreign land." Moses was content to live with the family, but that was not to say he no longer cared for his people and their deliverance. It was a case that there was still more training to be done. The period spent in the open shepherding sheep would prove to be of a great value when God eventually called him to be the redeemer of his people. And finally, verses 23 to 25, I've called it "The Redeemer Presence is Required." Now it happened in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel groaned because of the bondage, and they cried out, and their cry came up to God because of the bondage. So God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God acknowledged them. The death of the Pharaoh, who had caused the Israelites so much suffering, may have raised their hopes that things would soon get better. Hope that the new king would be sympathetic, that he would ease their burdens. Unfortunately, that was a false hope. However, they were not forgotten, for their cries of groaning reached up to heaven, where it was heard by God, and God remembered his covenant. He saw the rigors and the burdens of the children of Israel, and he acknowledged that the time had come for their redemption. God does not forget, and he is faithful. When I did my first introduction, I mentioned about five words or phrases that could sum up the passage or the book. My five was oppression, redemption, faithfulness of God, rejoicing, and obedience. In chapter 2, we've again been reminded of the oppression of the Israelites, Pharaoh's command to drown all the Israelites, newborn baby boys. But we're also reminded of the faithfulness of God. We see the protection of Moses, and we see that God remembered his covenant. May we all keep trusting in God, knowing that he hears our cries and that he is faithful in keeping his promises. Hebrews 13:5 says, "I will never leave you or forsake you." God promised, God remembers, and God acts. Amen.